In this edition of In Focus, we meet Palestinian families living in minefields and under heavy rain of live munitions.
The heavy rain of bullets might begin any time. We just go inside and wait.
We will take a close look at Israel's military training zones and investigate the death of tens of Palestinian Bedouins due to the army's illegal activities.
Ibrahim found something that looked like a hand lamp. The moment he picked it up, it exploded.
Sometimes these Bedi tanks come and stop right here at the stairs.
In less than a year, hundreds of Palestinian shacks, homes and agricultural structures were demolished by Israeli military bulldozers near the Jordanian border. Stay tuned to know more. In the summer, the temperatures here hit as high as 50 Celsius degrees. Welcome to the hottest and most volatile place in the Palestinian territories, the Jordan Valley.
The Jordan Valley's Israeli settlements and military bases are the fastest growing in the West Bank. The settlement construction began in 1967 and it was concentrated in the Jordan Valley. They occupied our main agricultural land.
The Jordan Valley represents 26% of the entire West Bank. It is the land of great extremes, stretching across the rich soil of a river basin to sweeping pasture slopes and rocky mountain passes. Throughout the year, its climate changes from winter rains to summer heat. The Palestinian Bedouin communities have lived here for generations and maintain their traditional lifestyle, moving with their herds to fresh grazing and water sources. A silent conflict has been going on here since Israel occupied the West Bank and Gaza in 1967.
Behind me is the Israeli settlement of Mechola. It is based on 60-70% of the northern valleys. They took all the rich soils. They control all the water supplies. Now, the Israeli private company Mekorot is selling the Palestinian inhabitants small amounts of water for high prices.
Around 13,000 Israeli settlers live in the area, and the number is increasing. It is in fact approaching the Palestinian Bedouin population in the northern valleys, who are banned from accessing 90% of their agricultural lands.
Obviously, water and agriculture are big interests for Israel, but the most important thing is that the area's topography is very similar to that of South Lebanon. Hence, the Israeli army uses it for trainings and planning war scenarios.
Over 70% of the area is an Israeli military closed zone. Almost every day and around the hour, the army carries out military drills, deploying warplanes, tanks, and ground troops. This video was captured by a soldier during one of the trainings.
Thank you. This small Palestinian town is one of the Israeli battlefields. The training is around the hour. A bomb might explode any time. The firing, the random firing, might take place any time. And death is simply one of the residents.
The random firing and the explosive leftovers scattered throughout the farmlands have killed at least 30 Palestinians over the past 30 years.
هم يتعمدون ترك هذه المخلفات وتحديدا في منطقة تسمى تيسير أو يرزح حتى كمان.
The Israeli army deliberately leaves hazardous explosives and randomly fires live munitions, particularly in the small town of Yarza. Many young shepherds were injured and some died on the spot. We are trying hard to raise awareness among the people in those dangerous areas. This is all what we can do. We are not allowed to send any police or even try to scan and clear the area from the Israeli army's leftovers.
Though we knew we're not allowed in there, we decided to visit the small impoverished town which the governor was talking about, Yarze. Our long trip from the nearby city of Tubas to Yarze was full of hardships. The rain and mud forced us to leave our vehicle. Luckily, locals gave us a ride. We passed through the Israeli checkpoint of Al-Hamra, where two Palestinians were shot in cold blood by Israeli troops January this year. Both Tayasia and Hamra checkpoints besieged the whole area, making the movement of people and goods very dangerous and difficult. Being part of Area C means no building is allowed without the permission of the Israeli civil administration. Well, nobody gets a permit in an Israeli military zone, except the Israeli settlers who occupy the hills.
Here we are, Yarze. No electricity, no water, nothing. But there's still life. It took us around 2 hours to get here. This is why many of the injured in this place died before reaching the city's hospital.
Mukhlis is one of the active inhabitants of Yarze. He knows where and when the Israeli trainings happen. We went with him on a tour, driven by the fact that only few journalists were able to reach this side of the world. Over the past 2 decades, 9 shepherds died while grazing their cattle.
We just found this piece. This is only a sample of the extremely dangerous leftover munitions. Looks like a missile coming out from one of those Israeli tanks.
The area is simply full of army leftovers.
قبل 30 سنة تقريبا أو 35 سنة كان عدد الأسر اللي تسكن هاي قرية يرزة أكثر من 120 أسرة.
Before the Israeli occupation, there were over 120 families living in Yarze. The overall population was about 800. When the army came in the 60s, at least 115 families left Yarze. Now, the number of the remaining families is only 10, and we can barely make a living here.
Mukhlis's brother, Ibrahim, died at the age of 9 when he picked up an explosive device. Hafiz is his cousin. 18 years ago, he was grazing the cattle with Ibrahim before the explosion removed the kid's head. This man survived despite his serious injury.
I remember in 1993, I was 16 years old. Ibrahim found something that looked like a hand lamp. The moment he picked it up, it exploded. He died. God bless his soul, and I fainted.
The most recent case was reported in 2008, when a 16-year-old boy stepped on a mine and died instantly. In Yarzeh alone, there are 15 injured people because of the random firing of live munitions and explosive leftovers. The rain of bullets, as called by the people here, continues to leave marks everywhere. 5 years ago, Mukhlis's mother was hit by a stray bullet.
The heavy rain of bullets might begin any time. We just go inside and wait. Sometimes the bullets come inside. Where can we go? Without our cattle and land, we can't make a living. We have nobody but God.
This strong lady has a bullet settled in her pelvis. Her husband, who was in Jordan during our visit, has also a bullet close to his spine since 30 years. It is lunchtime. The meal was spectacular.
After having a long trip around, what could be better than having an organic meal? Organic bread, organic cheese, milk, fried herbs, olives, eggs, everything is organic here. There is always a bright side of every sad story.
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar.
In November 2010, the Israeli bulldozers demolished Yarzeh's mosque, though the prayers have not stopped. Mukhlis's house is the only building with an Israeli license. They got it in 1967. All the other structures they built were repeatedly demolished by the Israeli military bulldozers.
Even the cattle shelters are not allowed. Recently, the army gave us demolition warnings. They want us to take it off ourselves, otherwise they would come later and do it by force.
And this is what happened. 2 days after we left, the army came and destroyed 7 cattle shelters owned by Mukhlis's family. He captured this video and sent it to us.
The Israeli law, we have the right to help.
No, it's a military closed area.
There are daily or almost daily
New demolition orders are issued by the Israeli civil administration almost on a daily basis. Israel wants more land. That's all. The Palestinians in the Jordan Valley have official Jordanian building licenses since the Jordanian mandate.
Last year, Israel demolished hundreds of Palestinian shacks, homes, and agricultural structures throughout the Jordan Valley. In December 2010, the military bulldozers tore down an elementary school and a Red Cross building in the town of Tana. We tried to arrange for a TV interview with an Israeli military spokesman, but our emails and phone calls with the army's media office led to nothing. The Israeli civil administration also refused to meet with us and favored giving us a brief statement. The civil administration is required to enforce building laws in Yehuda and Samaria. The West Bank. Most of the aforementioned enforcement is done as a result of building that is taking place without the required building permits, as well as building in military zones. This type of building not only breaks the law, but also endangers the lives of the residents. At the same time, it is important to highlight that the civil administration is working to establish permanent residence for Bedouin communities that reside nomadically in the Jordan Valley. In the framework of this project, funded by Israel, 160 Bedouin families have been granted permanent homes and infrastructure in the Male Adumim area within the last few years alone. Within the next few years, Israel plans to fund and implement hundreds of similar projects.
Sometimes these very tanks come and stop right here at the stairs. They want us to leave.
One Israeli officer told me that this government will put us in a safe place. I said to him, we were born here and we are going nowhere. Yes, the Israeli officer said so.
They were trying to fool us.
They told me to sign papers, but I refused.
This family is living in the heart of the Israeli military closed zone. Mahmoud was asleep when a stray bullet penetrated his shoulder and settled near his spine.
Sometimes when I slaughter my sheep, I find bullets in their bodies. I guess this is why many of my cattle died suddenly or stopped reproducing. The heavy rain of bullets hits everywhere.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said repeatedly Israel won't withdraw from the Jordan Valley under any final solution with the Palestinians. He believes this is necessary to prevent weapons smuggling into the prospective demilitarized future Palestinian state. Israel's military actions and settlement activities in the West Bank are illegal under international law.
Israel is not a signatory of the Ottawa Treaty. This convention prohibits the use, stockpiling, production, and transfer of anti-personnel mines.
There is a reason behind that. According to a report published by Israel's State Monitor in 1999, there are 350 anti-personnel minefields spread throughout the Jordan Valley, mostly along the Jordan borders and around the settlements.
According to the Ottawa Convention, the minefields have to be marked and surrounded by fences. Israel did mark some of them, but most of the marks are not clear and worn out.
The Landmine and Cluster Munition Monitor says Israel contributed $98,000 to the UN Voluntary Trust Fund for assistance in mine clearance. There are an estimated 260,000 mines in Israel, mostly along the borders and the occupied territories.
Setting minefields might cost $2 per mine, while removing only one costs over $10,000. The Palestinians won't be able to demine the Jordan Valley after ending the occupation. Israel is responsible to do that.
منطقة ستتسع يعني لعدد السكان الجدد القادمين.
The Jordan Valley is strategically important for the Palestinians. We are planning to contain our new residents in this wide green area after achieving statehood. It is the core of our national agricultural income, and certainly it contains our main source of water. Without it, there won't be a viable Palestinian state.
Abu Rabi'a, owns 15 hectares of farmlands in the northern valleys. His trade usually dies in the summer due to the shortage of water.
عندهم المزارع اليهودي بيستهلك قد المزارعين الموجودين عندنا هون في منطقة الغور. مزارع واحد.
One Israeli farmer consumes an amount of water equal to the total Palestinian water consumption rate in the area. This is why I have to wait for 5 days till I get from the Israelis my tiny share of water. The amount I get can barely meet my basic needs. I can only feed my family and I can't make any profit.
According to the second Oslo Interim Agreement signed in 1995, Israel is permitted to use 80% of the water in the West Bank, whilst Palestinians were guaranteed the use of just 20%. However, Israel's violations have reduced the Palestinian share to less than 15%. This is the settlement of Maskiot. 400 Israeli settlers were moved to live here following the Israeli withdrawal from the Gaza Strip in 2005. They have repeatedly attacked the Palestinian Bedouins in the area and robbed their sheep without any Israeli security interference. Into this deeply troubled area drives a mobile clinic. Its staff, determined to take vital medical help, advice and support into the heart of these Bedouin communities struggling to survive. The clinic provides the only regular access to essential health services to 26 isolated Bedouin encampments.
Frankly speaking, we are working in a minefield. Israel does not allow us to work here, although we are sponsored by an international organization. Sometimes the settlers attack us.
On the 28th of June, 1971, Sami Sadek was 16 years old. He was hit with 3 stray bullets, which paralyzed him. He's now the head of the Al-Aqaba's village council. The Israeli civil administration issued demolition orders against 95% of the village's buildings. Since 1967, the random firing by Israeli troops killed 15 people and injured 50 in this peaceful village.
بعد اتفاقيات أوسلو توقعنا السلام قد حل ما بين الشعبين وبدأنا العمل وأخذنا العقب بعينة.
We thought that the Oslo Agreement in 1994 brought peace to the region. Back then, we decided to make the Aqaba village a microcosm of Palestinian peace. Our village experienced the worst living conditions amid constant fear of death because of surrounding military bases. Sadly, Oslo did not bring real peace, and the Israeli aggression continued. However, we still believe that nonviolent resistance is the only way to win.
The residents of Al-Aqaba won an Israeli trial in 2003 and were able to force the Israeli army to remove one of the 3 military bases near the village.
This is all what we have for this edition of In Focus. Till we meet again, I'm your host, Sari Al-Khalili. Have a great day.